Welcome to the I Have ADHD podcast, where it's all about education, encouragement, and coaching for adults with ADHD. I'm your host, Kristen Carter, and I have ADHD. Let's chat about the frustrations, humor, and challenges of adulting, relationships, working, and achieving with this neurodevelopmental disorder. I'll help you understand your unique brain, unlock your potential, and move from point A to point B.
Hey, what's up? This is Kristen Carter, and you're listening to the I Have ADHD podcast. I am medicated, I am caffeinated, I am regulated, and I am ready to roll. How's it going? So glad you're here. So happy that you decided to press play on this podcast today. I know you have a lot going on in your life, so many things vying for your time and attention and energy, and yet here you are with me, you and me here together right now, and I'm so glad that this is happening. Today is part one of a two-part conversation with a client and focus member, Jen Kirkman, who is a writer, producer, comedian, podcaster, and New York Times best-selling author of two books. Girlfriend doesn't mess around. She does not mess around. Jen was misdiagnosed for most of her life with anxiety and depression, and only in the last few years has she understood that ADHD was really at the core of all of her struggles. In part one of our conversation that you're going to hear today, it's an in-depth description of her journey. And to me, it's very important that I share real, raw stories directly from ADHDers, because it truly helps us all to understand that we are not alone. You need to hear Jen's story. You need to hear about how she was misdiagnosed and yet was still able to set her life up in a way that made sense for her. You need to hear how she was able to become what she calls a middle class in show business. And that made me laugh so hard. I mean, writing on The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel is hardly what I would call middle class, but whatever. I mean, incredible. So listen up, ADHDer. Remember, you're not alone. You're not weird or broken. And you have a community here with us in this podcast. So as you listen to Jen's story, I hope that you are encouraged. I hope that you are encouraged about the possibilities of what might be possible with a life of somebody with ADHD. Please enjoy my interview with the most famous person that I know, Jen Kirkman. Hi, Jen. Welcome to the podcast. I am so glad that you're here.
I'm fangirling because, as you know, I'm a huge fan of your podcast and I'm a member of Focused. So I'm watching your calls all the time on video. I take you on my laptop around my apartment with me. And so it's so weird to be talking with you and it's happening live.
I love it. It's so fun. And I love that you interviewed me on your podcast a while ago. Yeah. And I don't think at the time you were a member. Were you a member at the time?
I wasn't a member yet. And so, I wasn't fully realizing that everything that I had in quotes wrong with me was all of it stemming from ADHD. And so I was still on this trip of like that it's anxiety. And I know it could be. I know people can have comorbidities, but I learned by doing this podcast that I used to do called Anxiety Bites. It's 46 episodes. It's just kind of a one season thing. I learned doing it by interviewing people and hearing experiences and talking to neuroscientists and all that. I just started to go, I don't think this through line of what makes me tick and not tick is just this thing called generalized anxiety disorder. It just isn't. Yeah. I don't relate with what I'm being told it is.
Yeah.
And so, so when I interviewed you, I was kind of talking about the intersection of ADHD and anxiety. I knew I had been diagnosed with ADHD. I wasn't that deep into my diagnosis when you and I talked. I was a little deeper into it, but not full on the way I am now, where I'm a member and I'm getting coached and I'm working on it every day. Yeah.
That's amazing. Okay. So before we hop into all of that, tell us who you are and what you do, because your life is very exciting.
It seems that way, but if you saw my life, you would be like, what? This person's in bed a lot. I will say, just before I introduce myself, I have this thing I do every morning called bed quarters. And it's like where I run my life, like, you know, headquarters pun.
Oh my gosh, I love that.
Yeah. So I will talk to you about that later. So I'm joking. I'm not joking when I say I'm in bed a lot, but I'm not actually sleeping. I'm running the world. So my name is Jen Kirkman. I'm a former touring stand-up comedian. I did that for 25 years. I didn't tour all 25 years, but I gave that up about 3-4 years ago. Just didn't interest me anymore. There's no dramatic story there. And I've always written for TV over the years as well. And now I'm just fully just doing that. So I'm a TV writer. I've written on a ton of shows and I live in Brooklyn full-time. Most recently, I was a writer for all seasons on The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. And then I'm working now on a new show that no one's heard of yet. So it doesn't even matter if I say the name, but it's by the same creators. We're on strike right now. And so, yeah, you know, I've done it all. I've been an author. I've acted some. I've done stand-up. I have Netflix specials. I've toured. But now as I get older, I just want, well, ironically, I wanted job security. So I went back into writing full-time and now I'm on strike. But, but you know, but yeah, so I'm trying to simplify my life and be very specific about what I want to do. And writing is something I actually love now in terms of what the job actually is, which people picture it as sitting and typing, and it's not. And I don't mind not being in the spotlight. And I host a podcast called No Fun. And I just kind of talk about my life every week. And, you know, between doing a podcast where I can just kind of say my own thing and then writing for other people, that's about it. I don't want to have 50 million other things going on. You know, as I call it, dreaming and scheming. I have no more dreams and schemes. So that's me. I think my life probably was very exciting, but these days it's very much any normal life where you're getting up, going to work, coming home and being like, do I zone out in front of the TV or do I do something I need to do? Do I call a friend? You know, the structure of my life is pretty similar to, I would think, most people.
And has that been really intentional, like an intentional discipline that you've incorporated, simplifying your life and kind of constraining, not really dreaming and scheming anymore? Or has that been just like a natural flow just as you've gotten older and kind of done the gamut of things? Like, has it been intentional or has it been a natural intuitive thing?
I think it's a natural intuitive thing. I mean, I was, you know, in 2008 to 2014, my career was really firing on all cylinders. There was a pot on every whatever you call it on your stove. I don't cook. What do you call the thing on the stove that you put the pot on? Burner. I need to mention to everyone, I'm 40. I'll be 49 on August 28th. So I'm not only ADHD, I'm perimenopause. And oh, they go so well together. They're so compatible. They're like twins. Yeah.
They are twins. They're twins. It just exacerbates every single symptom that you've already struggled with.
Yeah, that's my opinion. And mine too.
Okay.
And that's why I didn't know what a burner was a minute ago. Anyway, but yeah, so I was in 2008 to 2014, I wrote on this TV show, Chelsea Lately, that was Chelsea Handler hosted it on the E! Network. So you're there 5 days a week, but you're also on camera. So, you know, all of the people that were regularly on her show, including myself, you start to build a fan base of your own. And, you know, you got to capitalize on it when it's happening. And so I got a book deal and then I started touring, but I'm also working 40 hours a week, 50 weeks a year. So I was always working, but it was a choice. I guess everything is, but it wasn't a choice in the sense that I would never have said, let me have all the things happening. Each one in and of itself could be a 40-hour a week job. Never. But you don't say, sorry, book deal, can't do it now. Sorry, tour, can't do it now. Yeah. This is when people are interested. Yeah. And I think everyone that works in entertainment has to go through a period when you're successful. Now, that might look like success to some people. To me, success looks like being able to say no, because you're so popular, your fan base isn't going to disappear if you don't, you know? Angelina Jolie does not have to take every movie that comes along for fear of this could be the last.
Yeah.
So it's sort of a deceptive success. It looks busy and successful on the outside, but on the inside, it's really, this is the moment. And in 3 years, it could be nothing, tumbleweeds. Mm-hmm. And so it's never what people think. I'm not a workaholic. I'm not so successful. It's just what it looks like for like what I'd call like the middle class performer where I go through an airport. One person might be going, oh my God, I'm the biggest fan. Someone else goes, who is that? That happens all the time.
Right.
If I ever get recognized by anyone, which is very rare, but they're always with someone going, who? And I'm like, don't worry about it. It's she's into it. But, you know, so that kind of thing, I just had to. And I keep saying I didn't have a choice, but I wasn't really consciously making a choice going, this is what I want for my life. I always thought that's something I'm not in control of. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then as I got older and touring started to feel exhausting, and it's, you know, you do 5 shows a weekend, that's 1 hour each. It looks like you're doing 1 hour of work. You know this with having a podcast. It's 1 hour of the thing, the performance, the microphone's on.
Right.
And it's 39 hours of all the other stuff.
Yeah.
And you've got to love what you're doing to put up with the 39 hours of the other stuff. And I used to love it as and then once the hour of doing the fun stuff just did not seem worth it for all the other stuff, I went, I think I'm done. And I feel like I said what I needed to say in this format and like, oh, great. Like it was the easiest transition out of something ever. And I was lucky because I was already writing on a TV show. I was writing on Mrs. Maisel. So 4 years ago when I stopped doing stand-up, it was a very easy choice. Like I was starting to feel this way around 2019. Thinking, geez, touring like as half of my career is a lot. And I didn't think I wanted to give it up, but I did it until I absolutely knew like, I'm not into it. This isn't a phase. Yeah.
It's good.
I did it until I burned out, which you kind of have to sometimes to make sure. And then I remember saying to my manager, December 2019, we had a dinner. What's the year going to look like 2020? I said, I know this isn't possible, but I need the world to stop so I can take a minute here.
Jen Kirkman.
I'm sorry. It's my fault.
Now we know who is responsible.
It wasn't a lab leak or a bat. It was me.
Oh my goodness. Well, you got your wish.
I don't know if you've ever seen, there was this TV show on when I was younger called Amazing Stories. And it was sort of a sci-fi show, like a Twilight Zone. And there was an episode about nuclear war and all these bombs had been sent towards America. And this woman had the power to freeze everything just by putting her fingers together.
Oh, I remember that. When you do that pose, I'm like, oh, I've seen that before. Yeah.
Yeah. So she paused the world so she's at the grocery store and everybody's paused and you see the bombs in the sky and she exists like everyone else is frozen in time and she can just live as long as she wants like that. But the minute she puts her fingers back together, everything's chaos, right? So that's an image I've had in my mind for a long time. Like I need to pause, but I can't pause. The world has to stop because I need to take a long time to figure out. Like whenever people go, I just took some time to figure out like how I wanted to restructure my life. I'm like, how? Because everything was still going on. The phone's still ringing. Emails are coming and you have to make a living. Like who has that luxury?
Right.
I still don't understand it. Like,
yeah.
And so when I said that, you know, I got my wish with the world shutting down with the early days of the lockdown and stuff. But I mean, I truly, short of a pandemic, I don't know that I ever would have stopped to think about what I'm doing. And like you're saying, did I constrain? I mean, so I couldn't tour anymore, which was, I was so happy. I had a writing job and we were doing it over Zoom. And I was totally fine financially. And I know this was not a lot of people's experience.
Sure.
So I had time and I knew the first thing I needed to do is just not rush into thinking. I just had to be. Mm-hmm. And I was still busy. I was working my other jobs, but I just kind of let feelings and thoughts come to me. And what I realized excited me was not, you know, like when you write on a TV show, your manager and agent are very rarely excited about it. They're gamblers, they're sharks. They want more, 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 find new things. So you get this job and you're ready to just like sit still. And they're like, this job's going to get you a great reputation. Now you got to sell your own show, you know? And you're so in the background, you're always writing your own thing after you get home from work.
Yeah.
And then you're trying to sell your idea mm-hmm. so that when your job ends, you have something else lined up and hopefully it's your own show. There's never any sense that you can enjoy and sit still with what you're in.
Do you feel like your ADHD was actually an advantage in this situation? And y'all know that I am not the person that thinks that ADHD is an advantage truly ever. However, I can look at the chaos of what was required from you with this profession of, I like how you put it, like a middle-class performer, as in like you're making a good living, but you have to keep going in order for that to continue, right? So it's not the luxury of we've got millions banked and we can just take, you know, whatever luxurious job we want that sounds the best. It's like, I got to stay on that hamster wheel in order to keep this moving forward. Do you see that ADHD was helpful in that for that season?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the ability to thrive in chaos.
Yeah.
To not even think it's chaos, first of all.
Right. This is just normal.
Yeah.
This is just how people live.
At all.
Yeah.
It worked for a while to not have a self boundary.
Yeah. For a while.
For a while.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So looking back, it was a blessing. I didn't even know what I didn't know.
Sure.
I didn't know what I was missing out on in terms of constraining and having boundaries. So, but I was burning out.
Yeah.
And like you're not ADHD is a superpower. Neither am I. I'm someone who really doesn't like when people say I didn't have a choice, but just truly in this small period,
sure.
the choice would have been take the opportunities or don't.
Right. Right.
But you kind of got to take them all and see which one's going to land.
Yeah.
But the one that always kept coming back was writing for TV. I was always asked to do jobs in that way. I've written a ton of scripts that no one's ever seen that I've sold to networks that didn't get made.
Sure.
But that's part of the job too. And that's great. So that was the one constant. Like that was one thing behind the scenes that people kept in their own way by hiring me, informing me, like, this is where you are needed. This is where you excel. And I resisted it for a long time because, you know, I wanted to be my own thing, you know, have my face and thoughts out there. And then there's just something about getting older where I think more about what I want to put out there.
Yeah.
And do I need to share every little thing I'm going through? Because unless you're a political stand-up comic or someone that just has like jokey jokes, I'm a narrative storytelling comedian about my life. And I was done bringing people along for the ride of what I was investigating in my own life. Now it's very private. Not that it's some big deal or anything terrible. I'm just not interested in maybe later, like there might be a one woman show in me like a little later that's about like menopause or something, but it's not there yet. I want to live first, you know? So anyway, it was one of those things where like during the pandemic, I was like, things started to fall away. And I remember saying to my manager, I said, I think I want to be a person who has a job, you know, a writing job and all this, try to sell a show behind the scenes. I'm tired of it. Like I gave all the ideas I had. Yeah. I was lucky to sell some of them and write the scripts. They didn't get made. And then others, the people would stare at me in the room and go, what's this pitch? No, we don't think, no thanks. And I said, if I want to write a script like for fun on my own, I will, but it has to be for fun. It would be like, I might talk to my manager and I are friends. So I might say to her, oh, I have an idea about a TV show about a woman who takes a walk. And she'd be like, great, I'm going to set up a meeting with this. And next thing you know, I'm, as they call, soft pitching the idea to,
right,
to producers to see if they're interested. And if they are, they say, please write this. We'll partner with you and we'll pitch it. And in a way it's like, can I just write for fun? I may never show anyone the script. I might just use it as a sample to get another writing job, but I'm getting off that hamster wheel and it means less money for them or less chance of money for them.
Sure.
And she was like, yeah, just, and I said, I need one job. And again, I didn't know this was ADHD or I thought it was this collective burnout we all realized we had.
Sure.
Once the world stopped, which I think it was. And I said, but I can't do all this. So everything that was working for me as an ADHDer who wasn't taking their diagnosis seriously stopped working.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it probably had stopped a lot earlier than that, but I didn't know. And then, so I just made a very conscious choice, like no more little side projects. Like, I just want to go to work and go home. I mean, and have a life, you know. I hadn't like been dating. I hadn't seen a lot of my friends. It was like, no.
So I'm curious what burnout looks like for you when you identify that you, like you say, like I was burning out. What did that look like? What did it feel like?
I think what it felt like was a complete emotional shutdown, like a lack of awareness of even how I felt.
Yeah.
Of like, who is this person whose body I'm in?
Oh, I resonate with that. I love that.
Like, I don't even know how I feel. Like, so I didn't feel burnt out. Like, I'm exhausted and I got some kind of, you know, immune disorder. Like, it wasn't physical as much as it was like the minute I did stop, my goodness, I needed more rest than I ever thought.
Yes.
And I was sleeping like a good 12 hours. I was just bringing joy slowly back into my life. So I kind of like didn't know I was burnt out until after.
So you stopped.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
I didn't stop. So it's like, I don't really remember. I don't know if I stopped because I felt burnt out, but I knew I felt a strong dislike for all the things that come along with touring, the flights, the promotion. Mm. I hate promoting. Mm. You know, all the things. I just didn't like it. And so that felt burnt out because I just felt like, I don't like it. I felt I don't like this about 30 hours a week. So whatever that is, that's what I call burnout.
That sounds like burnout to me. And I think that's for the listener, that's a really good kind of checkpoint, because we might not identify burnout because we're still going, we're on the hamster wheel. But if our body and our just like soul is kind of resisting everything we're doing and just being like, I don't want to do it. That's a good indicator that like maybe we need to pause.
I remember a friend said to me, I have a really funny friend, Tammy. We came up in the New York City comedy scene in the 90s. We both ended up moving to LA and she met a woman, got married and had a kid. And she was like, I don't love comedy enough like you do to put up with all the crap, but you do. And no one had ever said to me anything so succinct in my life. Mm-hmm. And I thought of that every time I didn't like all the other stuff that goes into it. And that's why I had that awareness when, okay, now it's not just like, oh, this part's annoying, but I love it. Now it's just like, I hate everything and it's affecting my ability to perform. Yeah. Now I hate performing and that doesn't seem right.
Yeah.
Now I'm angry that I have to be on stage. And like, if the audience really knew how much I didn't want to be, and I started shows with like, I'm at work right now. Do you know how badly I want to be where you guys are having a drink, watching something?
It's
very hard to have a job that's at 8 at night, 10 at night on the weekend, and everyone's having a drink and laughing. I'm like, that looks fun. And I'm like mad. I'm mad. I can't, you know. So it's like,
that's good.
Yeah. If you love it, sure. That's great. But I was like, okay, something's wrong. And my friend Tammy's words like resonated where it's like, oh, I'm burning out. But yeah, I mean, I read a book about burnout that said the early signs of burnout are often thoughts. They're little whispers. Having entirely burned out is very different, but you don't really want to get there.
Sure.
You don't have to earn the burnout. You don't have to be like, now I'm hospitalized. You're allowed to say, I'm starting to burn out. I'm getting these clues from my own mind. And that the goal of checking in with yourself is so you can stop the burnout from totally happening.
Sure.
So I don't know if I ever officially completed a massive burnout, but I caught myself about halfway.
Yeah. I think that it makes sense to think of it as a spectrum of like, we can start with just those whispers and then we can move into like our whole body being like, I don't want to do it. And then maybe losing sleep, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know all the symptoms of burnout, but yeah, I think like if we were to go to the climax, it would be hospitalization, but like, let's not.
Yeah.
Let's not go there. Taking care of your health isn't always easy, but it should at least be simple. Like, why isn't it more simple? And that's why for the last 2 years, I've been drinking AG1 persistently, pretty much every day. It's just one scoop mixed in water once a day, and it makes me feel so much better. I've noticed improved focus, better mental clarity, better concentration. And what I just learned about it is that it supports healthy hormone production, which is so important to me now that I'm in perimenopause. I truly do feel so much better. And that's because each serving of AG1 delivers my daily dose of vitamins, minerals, pre and probiotics, and more. It's just like a really powerful, healthy habit that's also powerfully simple. And it has to be simple, right? Because I have ADHD. If it's not simple, I'm telling you, I'm not going to do it. That's just the truth. This is so simple. Now, you all know that for decades, I have reached for the coffee pot the instant that my eyes open. And when I introduced I use the word habit very loosely, the habit of drinking AG1. I've done that later in the day, but to my absolute shock, I've been able to change that. Now I drink AG1 first thing in the morning, which is recommended for optimal nutrient absorption. I literally picture my like gut and my cells just like absorbing all of the goodness first thing in the morning. And I've got to tell you, I do feel a difference. I fill up my shaker with extra cold water. My eyes are not even open yet. I add one scoop of AG1. I shake it up, good to go. It takes me 30 seconds max from start to finish. And I am not exaggerating it. It's so simple, or I wouldn't do it. And it's helped me feel so much better, especially in the mornings. If there's one product that I had to recommend to elevate your health, it's AG1. And that's why I've partnered with them for so long and exclusively. They're the only product that I've allowed to have ads on this podcast because I believe in it so much. So if you want to take ownership of your health, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1 year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase exclusively at drinkag1.com/IHaveADHD. That's drinkag1.com/IHaveADHD. Check it out.
I just had a thought too that I think, you know, it's very true for the entertainment industry, but I think it can apply to anything, which is when you're outside of it and you're dreaming of it and you think, when I get this, I'll have that. Sometimes it's an emotional thing. Oh, when I have this, I'll feel secure. But sometimes we actually don't know how much things pay. And we think, when I get this, then I'll get paid that. And then I'll be secure, able to do this. And when you get there and you realize that's not true, you know, you don't have to keep going if that doesn't work for you, if that makes sense. So like, and I think people need to realize that in any industry that they're in. And I didn't know about this stuff until I started investigating my ADHD and doing all of the ADHD work, whether it's mm-hmm. coaching with you or just reading books. Mm-hmm. I have a whole new way of looking at my life because of my ADHD diagnosis. It has made me do self-care and self-work that I think the average person does not have a reason to do because they're not suffering in this ADHD way. So I don't want to be, hey, it's a superpower. But if I had to do it all over again, I would have ADHD.
Wow.
I may want to have started working on things sooner.
Yeah.
But I don't know many people without ADHD that are living so self-aware and so careful as I am. And it's really paying off for me. You know,
wow,
as much as it sucks, it's really yeah. paying off. So I look back on like when I got my first book deal, I had maybe 200,000 Twitter followers, right? Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh my gosh. Everyone, 200,000 times how much is a book? $15.99. Oh my gosh, I'm going to be a millionaire.
Yeah.
And I did the math. Yeah, that's $3,198, right? So I did the math. I'm writing the book and I'm like, here we go. And then I find out after the book is written and all is said and done, and I have my little advance, which was lovely, but not,
sure.
You know, you still have to have 10 jobs. They said to me, oh, no. Yeah, we gave you the book deal because you're on this TV show and people see your face and you have 200,000 followers. But we know that if we're lucky, 2,000 of those followers will buy the book. That's why you got a book deal. You know, you don't want to start. Now, if you just have 2,000 followers, 20 of them will buy a book.
Right.
And I was like, so this notion of what it takes, how much exposure it takes, and how your own fans are not going to buy your work. And there's no reason. Right. You know, as an ADHDer, I can relate. Why don't I just put my key on the keychain and hang it up? I don't know. I want to.
Yeah.
I won't. You know, so it's like, I didn't know stuff about the business until I was in it. So people can come to you for advice. How do I start this? How do I start that? It's like, you don't need advice until you start doing the thing.
Yes.
And so now I'm like, oh, okay. So writing a book is like anything else. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not a get rich quick scheme. Did I love writing it? No. I mean, not enough to not think there's $3 million at the end of the rainbow.
Shoot.
And I don't mean that. I don't mean it from an entitled way. Like, this is where my thoughts used to stop before. That's entitled. You're not going to make $3 million. So shut up and write more books because that's what you do. That's how my thoughts used to be.
Yep.
In ADHD recovery, I go, well, wait a minute. Okay. So of course, anyone would want to write a book if they knew $3 million was coming. But now that you know it isn't, do you love it enough? I didn't really. I mean, I like writing. I might write some essays sometime for fun, but no, all the work it takes and all the promotion, like, I don't think so. Okay, great. So you had that dream and you didn't totally know what it was made of. You liked the idea of saying, I wrote a book, but did you love it all? Like, now that you've done it? No. Okay, great. So you don't have to worry about writing books anymore. And that's where the ADHD recovery has brought me. I used to judge my own thoughts, you know? Oh my God, what kind of person am I thinking I wanted $3 million? A normal person that thinks that would solve a lot of problems?
Totally.
And now I just don't judge my thoughts. I investigate them and go, great.
Yeah.
So if the only reason I would do something, like in other words, like if someone said, how much money would I have to pay you for you to eat a bug? You'd say 10 million.
Totally.
So that lets you know that you're probably not that into eating bugs, but you do it, you know?
Probably not that into eating bugs. Yes. Like, that's a great tagline. Jen Kirkman, probably not that into eating bugs.
But you don't judge yourself and go, oh my God, what a materialistic bleep, bleep, bleep I am. Because I want 10 million to eat a bug. It's like, no, that's what it would take.
Yeah. You just don't really like bugs that much. And that's okay. Yeah,
it's okay. Through doing all this ADHD recovery work, I'm refocusing. I'm reevaluating what's important to me and allowing myself to have an opinion about what's important to me and trying not to make a decision about like what's important to me in a rash moment.
Yeah.
You know, and not beating myself up for thoughts I'm having. Like, turns out sometimes you do only want to do things for the money. And usually the stuff we love is like not the stuff that makes a lot of money, or we do if we're lucky, but we're willing to do it even if not everyone finds out about it.
Yes. That's so good. Yeah. That's so good. So I want to really go into ADHD recovery, and I love that you call it that. But before we do, can you tell us your journey to being diagnosed? When were you diagnosed? How did that process happen for you?
Yeah, so I had, you know, since I was a teenager, I had panic attacks, ones that I call out of the blue and ones that were specific to phobias, like a phobia of airline travel, a phobia of driving. Which is ironic that I ended up traveling for a living and I obviously overcame that phobia. And now it's like my favorite thing. But so I had things, I had mental health issues. I had depression and all kinds of stuff popping off. You know, I'd been in therapy forever. I'd had a psychiatrist at the time. I was on and off antidepressants. Like, I never really found that they totally worked except the first time I took them. And then later on, now that I'm in perimenopause, but in the in-between years, I'd go on and off and really not feel that I noticed the difference on or off them. Again, that was because I wasn't properly diagnosed. Right. But anyway, when I was 35 years old, so that's 14 years ago, my boyfriend at the time said, and he didn't even know he was saying this. He didn't even know the profundity of what he said, but he said, You're kind of a lot because you think everything's of equal importance. And this laundry that you have to fold, is like the same importance as like, if someone said, you know, the fate of the world is in your hands, Madam President, you know?
Yeah.
And in your own life, like a deadline for work and the laundry is the same. And it's different than procrastination. It's not, oh, I have to write on this deadline, so I'll fold my laundry instead. It's not. It's being completely stressed out, freaked out, emotionally unregulated because you have these two things to do. And your mind can't say, well, I got to write. That sucks, but I'll do the laundry tomorrow. Like, yeah. No. Not, that's not an option.
Yeah.
And it was affecting our relationship because it was like, I might cancel plans at the last minute because I have to fold laundry, you know, like, but I have to, you see, or else the fate of the world is in my hands. You know, it's like,
yes.
So he said, you should ask your psychiatrist, the guy you talked to about medication, about that. Like he jokingly said, is there a pill for that? And I told my psychiatrist and he goes, you know how many people are diagnosed by their partners?
They
come in with these weird symptoms. And he's like, that's ADHD. And I said, oh, and I didn't have it as a kid. Or now I look back, I totally did. But he said, well, what do you want to do? And I said, I don't know. And again, I didn't know anything about stimulants or meds. I only knew Adderall. And I knew, you know, in quotes, it was bad.
Sure.
So he said, there's this drug called Focalin. It's, I don't know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And he just kept talking about focus and take it and you'll pay attention at work. But this whole conversation that brought me to it about the laundry and the prioritization, it didn't go anywhere.
Mm.
So like the minute he said, that sounds like ADHD, I took the test.
Mm.
I didn't understand why any of the questions were ADHD.
Yeah.
He, you know, did I do well on this test, Kristen? Better than on my SATs. I got
congratulations.
Every answer right. Thank you.
Congratulations.
I aced it. I think every answer was yes.
Yeah.
I have. You know. So, but we never talked about it. And I was with this guy 20 years and we talked about everything. He got me single-handedly over my fear of flying. I mean, this man was a genius psychiatrist.
Wow.
And really smart about medication. But it was just so odd that I come in with these kind of off-brand ADHD symptoms, or so I thought. Mm-hmm. He takes the conversation back to focus. I take the test. We don't discuss the results. He puts me on Focalin. I don't notice anything. There's no change, except my skin broke out really badly. And I found some message boards and other people said the same thing. It like maybe stimulated our sebaceous glands or something. I don't know.
Weird.
But it didn't work. And I was vain and didn't want to have cystic acne. And so I said, forget this. And so in my head, ADD medication meant cystic acne.
Right.
End of discussion. We're never going on any meds because that's how an ADHD person thinks, black and white.
Yeah.
No further investigation needed. So I told him the meds, you know, and I didn't really notice they did anything. He's like, yeah, a lot of people are like that. They just handle it without meds. I'm like, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Never talked about ADHD again.
I'm so upset on your behalf. I'm so sorry.
I know. So I'm in talk therapy at the same time with a therapist who I later fired because her boundaries were terrible.
Oh, shoot.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear that story sometime.
Yeah. She was just emotionally unregulated. She'd come in like, oh, sorry, I'm late. And here's my coffee. Like, I didn't know that wasn't okay.
Oh my gosh, honey.
She mirrored a lot of the chaos I had growing up. Like, you know, I do resonate with having emotionally immature parents. They're still mm-hmm. alive. They're lovely. We love them, but they're emotionally mature.
Mm-hmm.
Boundaries were not a thing.
Yeah.
So of course I find this therapist and I don't even notice that her boundaries are affecting our sessions. Mm-hmm. It does something to my soul that I don't know is happening where it makes me feel unsafe to explore things.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's that story. But anyway, so this guy, so I would talk to her about ADHD and she claimed she had it too, but she didn't recognize any of the symptoms like emotional. So here I am. I've got, you know, I'm working with the psychiatrist on the airplane stuff, which was more pressing in a way.
Yeah.
I thought.
Sure. It was the squeakiest wheel. It seemed like the squeakiest wheel.
Yeah. It's like, I can't do my job unless I get on a plane. So let's fix this.
Sure.
I'm talking to my therapist about all the other things in life, some sense of something's wrong. I don't know what.
Mm.
And she's taking it to this place that it really wasn't. Like, she was just so, she just knew what she knew and wanted everyone to fit into like what she knew. Mm. And, you know, it's like, am I a love addict? Am I a narcissist? Am I a love avoidant? Am I a bipolar? Am I a borderline? Like, we're investigating all of it. And I'm starting to feel like whack-a-mole. Like, like, man, I've got like 10 different psychiatric problems, I guess, you know? Mm. And none of them quite went the distance.
Yeah.
Because I always was like, but I function at work. I have relationships, romantic and friendships. Like, not, it's something else, you know?
Yeah.
To the point where I thought it was like a spiritual problem. You know, I've always been a spiritual person and like, I'm not religious, but I've always had spirituality in my life. And like, that's very helpful in a lot of ways when you just come up against the existential crisis of being human and you just go, I got to surrender to like, you know, I didn't choose to come to Earth, you know, like I'm just here and whatever that magic is, I got to surrender to it. Like, I'm not in charge here.
Mm.
So I love spirituality for that, but that doesn't solve the day to day. So I just sort of never found out what was wrong with me. I just kept going to this spiritual solution of got to surrender. Mm. It just wasn't working. So it was then, now we're in 10 years later or 12 years later, we're in 2020 lockdown. And because I have all this space, and because for me, the lockdown is working because I'm resting.
I'm fully
employed. I'm saving money. I was losing money on tour. That was an issue. So now I'm saving money. I'm safe. Mm-hmm. I'm content. And I'm overwhelmed. And it's not the overwhelm everyone else is talking about. They're scared of, you know, when is this going to end? Or my kids, or it was none of that. I don't have kids. I don't have pets. I don't have marriage. I was like, what the heck am I overwhelmed about? And it was like, I'm just overwhelmed. I don't even know how to put it, but it's that familiar feeling of like, if I have to do anything, I'm overwhelmed. And it's stuff I want to do. And I do this thing where I drink a pot of coffee and fall asleep.
Wow.
Because the shutdown is so strong with me.
Oh my gosh, honey.
Yeah. So if I'm like not able to do something, I will just shut down. I'll just go to sleep.
Yeah.
I was doing that a lot. And no matter who I talk to, well, we're all sleeping in the pandemic. I'm like, no, it's not the thing. I'm telling you.
Yeah. There's something different happening.
So I'm still with the same psychiatrist, the medicine man. And I say, Dr. Dan, we got to revisit this ADHD diagnosis. Like, I started Googling. And I'm learning things and I'm like, okay. So I learn more symptoms that I can tell him about.
You're telling him.
Yeah.
Y'all, this is so not the way it's supposed to be.
The good news is he was like, oh yeah, I know those as ADHD symptoms. You've just never told me about them in this much detail. And I said, well, I've been talking to the talk therapist about these things. She claims she has ADHD, but she's never once said any of these sounded like ADHD. So I don't think she knows what she's talking about either.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
He goes, I'm so sorry. We just sort of like dropped your diagnosis 10 years ago because you didn't. I mean, he can only bring up what I bring up, but how would I have known? It's like vicious circle. So he said, would you like to try medication? And I'm like, well, they're bad. And he's like, well, if you abuse them, but if you need them, you know, I was very afraid. I thought I was going to have a heart attack or something. He put me on 30 milligrams of Vyvanse. And I was like, I literally started bawling the minute it kicked in. I was like, what? Is this what it's like to be normal? And it's the way I put it is, imagine if you're in a big city and there's cars honking and beeping and noise. And then you just realize that your window is open and you go, oh, and you just shut it and it's quiet. That's what it felt like.
That's so good.
It didn't motivate me to do anything anymore. It just took the noise away. And I think it gave me enough dopamine. Not that I was like high on life or Nothing sure. like that. Just enough to like sit still and do the things.
Just balances it out. So you're like at everyone else's starting point.
Right.
It's not an advantage. It's not like you're not high. It's just making the scale more even.
And because it's so revolutionary when it first hits you, it does feel euphoric.
Yeah.
You know, but people talk about this and I have a friend who's trans and they talk about, you know, so many people talk about the gender dysphoria of feeling like you're in the wrong gender, but no one really talks about the euphoria of when you feel like you've achieved for yourself the way you dress or whatever surgery might have, that you're in the proper gender and that the euphoria is how they know that they're trans. And so for me, like it's such a weird comparison, but the euphoria of knowing, I think I finally feel what it's like to be balanced is how I knew I was truly ADHD and had been suffering. And my psychiatrist was very supportive. He's like, yep, that, you know, and he's like, look, if you, you know, you still have to decide what you're going to focus on. So, you know, if you have a plan for the day to get some writing done, try to just sit down and write first. Don't start looking up flights to Bali because you'll do that for 3 hours, you know. But again, that moment where you take your meds and then have to decide to sit and write, that, how do you get there? That's where the work comes in that pills can't do. And that's where I go, well, weird. I have to find somewhere to do this because you don't do it with the psychiatrist once a month. So that's where like ADHD reading and coaching came in. But when I told my talk therapist about this euphoric feeling, she said, you're high. That's just, it's like you did cocaine.
Oh my goodness. Did you fire her that day? I hope you did.
No, because something I didn't know was an ADHD symptom actually until working on with you in focus is I didn't know self-trust. I didn't know I didn't have it. Because how could I have self-doubt and not self-trust? I was a stand-up comedian. I got up in front of people.
Yeah.
How could I ever think I have issues with that? Yeah. So she said that and I was like, oh, maybe I am. Oh, this is bad.
Yeah. Oh, and, honey.
And the euphoria wore off like 3 days later. It didn't feel that way every time I took it. It was just the first time.
Yeah.
It was literally like, I think I found some more information here. Fall. That's it.
It's like the start of a beautiful relationship where you've got all those butterflies and then those die down and you just commit and you're like, oh, like this is it.
And as great as the Vyvanse works for me, you know, I forget to take it all the time. I take the pills out of the cabinet and then I put it down and do something else. And then I come back and go, did I open that and take it? No clue.
Yeah.
And I think that's how you know you're not an addict is like, that's just not addict behavior, you know? So I've been on the same dosage the whole time. And I did fire that therapist like a year later. And then my psychiatrist retired. And I got a new psychiatrist who claimed he was an ADHD expert. He also was not. It took a lot for me to self-trust again. He wouldn't give me 30 Vyvanse. He would give me 20 and say, just take it 5 days a week. Then I said, but I don't have ADHD just 5 days a week. And he said, well, but work. And I said, well, I'm a creative, so I could work 7 days a week. But it's, I don't take it for work. I really don't. I said, but on the weekend, so this is what I would take it for work. And he was very like, take it for productivity and work and work. And it was like, I don't know, just very like capitalistic to me, but also very male. And I don't mean to offend men. I just mean it's very male in the sense of the studies that have been done.
Yes.
You know, about boys sitting still.
Yes.
It wasn't like, but I'm also in perimenopause and, you know, I bought my friend tickets to the ballet and then forgot them on the kitchen table. And I was so proud of myself because I'd packed the bag the night before and my brain said, put them on the table instead of put them in the bag. And I grabbed the bag and left the tickets, but we got there of my time blindness. I got there right on time. And we had to wait in line at will call and they couldn't find my order number. You know, it's like stuff like that.
Stressing where it's like, out.
Yeah.
That's the thing. I am so with you. It is not just for work. It is for life.
And I was like crying. My poor friend, I'm like, let me treat you to the ballet. And there I'm like crying. We couldn't have like a glass of champagne before because, you know, I mean, it was just like things like that. And then like, I locked myself out every weekend. I lose my Metro card, like nonstop. And then I do have my own things I do on the side, like my podcast or try to see friends. And I'd be so exhausted from masking at work all week that I would lay in bed for 48 hours. And then I would tell the psychiatrist that needs you have depression. So he's like, it's good to take a medication break because you can get reliant on it. And I'm like, but I am reliant on it.
That's the whole point. Not addicted.
Reliant is
not,
right,
addicted.
Not addicted.
Reliant.
But the thing is, again, there are some days where I just don't take it because it feels natural to just like, I don't feel like it.
Yeah.
Like whatever. I take my own natural vacations from it. And I do understand that like, if you take it all the time, you might get so used to it. You need to keep going up in dose, which
that
can
has
cause,
not
like,
been the case for me.
Not been the case for me either. I've been on it 3 years now. I haven't had to. So I finally found a great psychiatrist. Actually, she's a nurse practitioner who can prescribe.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what this psychiatrist, Mr. ADHD expert, said to me was, when I said I had to leave him because I needed more of an expert, he said, just don't get a nurse practitioner because only psychiatrists really know everything. And I'm like, she knows everything. She works in a psych ward. She works with people who are like high risk for addiction. So like if anyone's going to notice.
Yeah, she's going to.
She's going to. And she's young and hungry and keeps up on things.
Yeah.
She's a woman. She knows about perimenopause and ADHD. So she actually is an expert, even though her piece of paper hanging on her wall says a different thing. So I've never felt better. And then, you know, the past 2 years, again, through doing this anxiety podcast and realizing, okay, I think all these things that I thought were anxiety, no, this is ADHD. And so thank God for like memes on Instagram or TikTok.
I just need to stop you because you had a whole 46 episode podcast on anxiety, and that led you to realize that like you might have anxiety, but that's not the core of your issues. I just like, isn't that wild?
How much work
way
we have to do?
Yes, that, but also I'm like, should I say this? Should I not? So on Sunday, my husband's a pastor and he preached a sermon on how, like, how to figure out God's will. And everyone's, you know, like, how do I know what to do? How do I know what God's will is? And one of the points that he made is just like, your life circumstances are going to point you into the will of God. And like, if you're not a God person, whatever, like the universe is going to bring you to what you're meant to do. And I just see that so clearly in you. Like, I want, like, I'm gifted in speaking. I'm funny. I'm going to start a podcast. It's going to be about anxiety. And then you're moving forward and you're doing the thing and it is nudging you to the whole point, which is actually I don't have anxiety or maybe I do, but it's not the core of my issues. And I love the way. And if you're listening to this podcast, like you too are being led somehow to the thing. And it's just so good to just know, like, we're all going to get there. We're all going to figure it out. But there's so much suffering along the way. And I really want to honor that for you. Like, I'm so sorry that you had to go through decades of misdiagnosis.
I know. And you know, it's funny, like what you're saying with your husband and God's will. Yeah, whether it's God, the universe, whatever, it's like nobody said the will of God or the will of the universe is a straight line.
Yeah, so true.
Like, I don't know how invested I'd be in now I want to help others with ADHD. Now it's all I think about, you know? And it's been years. It's all I think about. Like,
oh my gosh.
Yeah. And I'm like, okay, so this is something I'm really passionate about. And how passionate would I be if it had been easy for me to know what the heck it is this whole time?
Yeah, so true.
And it's funny because when I was doing the anxiety podcast and I talked to these neuroscientists or psychiatrists and they talk about people with anxiety, they describe these people. And I don't mean it in a mean way, but I did find myself judging, going, geez, I don't have it that bad. Like,
yes.
You know, and I'm like, God, get it together, anxiety people. But I did feel like I was starting to feel kind of weird, like
distant from that.
I felt distant from the diagnosis. And I felt, you know, even the people that would write in and ask me questions.
Oh, like you weren't connecting.
Yeah.
Is that what you mean?
Like, I don't know what that is. I've never had that.
Yeah.
And I was like, maybe I don't have it as much.
Wow.
And I think the anxiety I felt was the anxiety of not knowing my diagnosis.
Yes.
And also, like, sure, there's a lot of stuff that, like,
yeah.
I mean, I always say the human condition is kind of anxiety because we're always like, I don't know what's going to happen. You know, the whole human condition is uncertainty, which can cause anxiety.
Yes.
And, but yeah, I mean, I had some phobia and panic attacks. It's totally different. And what's interesting is, you know, if I'm going to have a panic attack, I will have one driving on the freeway if I'm stuck in traffic. Anything that feels like I'm trapped, you know, airplane, I'm trapped.
Yeah.
And even though I know how to deal with it and I'm not afraid of the plane crashing or a car crash, mm-hmm. that trigger will happen. And the Vyvanse has prevented that.
Wow.
And what this new psychiatrist said is off brand. It's actually was developed for anxiety. It gives you the dopamine you need mm-hmm. to kind of focus and not let your body get into fight or flight. Because fight or flight, I'm learning, is a big part of ADHD as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so what she was saying is something like a Vyvanse, if you need it, if you are someone who's got our brain chemistry, it seems counterintuitive that it wouldn't mm-hmm. make you jittery, but it can actually mm-hmm. prevent a panic attack. And I've noticed it. I've been doing a lot of long distance driving lately for some family stuff. And I'm in situations that normally could trigger panic attack and I have to do my breathing and it's not happening.
Wow. Thanks for tuning in. Join me next week for part two of this conversation, where we'll discuss the concept of being in ADHD recovery and all that that entails. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.
Hey, ADHDer, I see you. I know exactly what it's like to feel lost, confused, frustrated, and like no one out there really understands the way that your brain works. That's why I created Focused. Focused is my monthly coaching program where I lead you through a step-by-step process of understanding yourself, feeling better, and creating the life that you know you're meant for. You'll study, be coached, grow, and make amazing changes alongside of other educated professional adults with ADHD from all over the world. Visit ihaveadhd.com/focused to learn more.